There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
1207 FM Talk 106.5 and live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're here. This show called Midday Mobile. My name is Sean Sullivan. Phone number, text line 343-0106. 343-0106. A lot to do today. We'll talk about some state issues and some pre-file bills with the upcoming session in Montgomery. Representative Matt Simpson will join us in hour number two. Coming up at 12:30, Jeff Poor will talk with us as we look through what's going to be made of this. You've got this, even though it was leaked, you have these allegations from John Bolton out there. And will this be enough to have Republican senators, even beyond Mitt Romney, other Republican senators cave and ask for witnesses? I don't know how, if this piece of information's out there, how they're not going to move forward with witnesses, at least attempting to get John Bolton in there to testify, because there's going to be... Remember, every place is not like Alabama, and Republicans are not in as solid footing everywhere as they are in Alabama, and there's those who are going to have to defend what they do or not do during this Senate impeachment process, and I have a feeling this piece of information or pieces of information coming out from Bolton, or at least allegations from Bolton, are going to have to be vetted or at least discussed in the Senate. So I think that's coming. And we're going to get to some of the Senate testimony right now, I think, is... Okay, Mitch McConnell is talking. We go to this. We'll go to a little bit of Mitch McConnell. Also coming up, President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu talking about the deal of the century, I think, to quote them, for Middle East peace. I pray the Lord that that is true. It could be an amazing thing. Talk about that as well. And Jeff Poor joins us in just a little bit. Yeah, let's go to the feed here live from the Senate as they get started on this Monday with the impeachment proceedings.
Mr. Chief Justice, I yield the floor.
Pursuant to the provisions of Senate Resolution 483, the counsel for the president have 22 hours and 5 minutes remaining to make the presentation of their case. The Senate will now hear you. Mr. Sekulow.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Senate, managers. What we've done on Saturday is the pattern that we're going to continue today as far as how we're going to deal with the case. We deal with transcript evidence. We deal with publicly available information. We do not deal with speculation, allegations that are not based on evidentiary standards at all. We are going to highlight some of those very facts we talked about very quickly on Saturday. You're going to hear more about that. I want to give you a little bit of an overview of what we plan to do today in our presentation. You will hear from a number of lawyers. Each one of these lawyers will be addressing a particular aspect of the president's case. I will introduce the issues that they're going to discuss, and then that individual lawyer will come up and make their presentation. We want to do this on a expeditious but yet thorough basis. Let me start with, just for a very brief few moments, to take a look at where we were. One of the things that became very clear to us as we looked at the presentation from the House managers was the lack of focus on that July 25th transcript. And that's because the transcript actually doesn't say what they would like it to say. Now, we've heard, and you will hear more about that in the days ahead. We know about Mr. Schiff's version of the transcript. You heard it. You saw it. I want to keep coming back to facts. Facts that are really undisputed. The president, in his conversation, was clear on a number of points, but so was President Zelensky. I mentioned that at the close of my arguments earlier, that it was President Zelensky that said, no pressure. I didn't feel any pressure. And again, as this kind of reading of minds of what people were saying, I think we need to look at what they actually said and how it's backed up. It is our position as the president's counsel that the president was at all time acting under his constitutional authority, under his legal authority, in our national interest, and pursuant to his oath of office. Asking a foreign leader to get to the bottom of issues of corruption is not a violation of an oath. It was interesting because there was a lot of discussion the other day about Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, and one of the things that we reiterate is that he himself said he did not know if there was anything of crime or anything of that nature. He had deep policy concerns. And I think that is what this is really about, is deep policy concerns, deep policy differences. But we live in a constitutional republic where you have deep policy concerns and deep differences. That should not be the basis of an impeachment. If the bar of impeachment has now reached that level, then for the sake of the republic, the danger that puts not just this body, but our entire constitutional framework in, is unmanageable. Are we going to have every time there's a policy difference of significance or an approach difference of significance about a policy, we're going to start an impeachment proceeding? But you know, as I said earlier, I don't really think this was about just a phone call. There was a pattern and practice of attempts over a 3-year period to not only interfere with the president's capability to govern, which, by the way, they were completely unsuccessful at. Just look at the state of where we are as a country. But also interfere with our constitutional framework. I'm going to say this, because I want to be brief. We are going to have a series of lawyers address you. So it will not be one lawyer for hours and hours. We're going to have a series of lawyers address you on a variety of issues. This is how we envision the president's defense going. We thought it would be appropriate to start with an overview, if you will, of some of the significant historical issues and constitutional issues involving impeachment proceedings, since we don't have a long history of that, and I think that's good for the country that we don't. And I think we would all agree. But if this becomes the new standard, the future is going to look a lot different. So we're going to hear next from my co-counsel, Judge Kenneth Starr. Judge Starr is a former judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. He served as the 39th Solicitor General of the United States, arguing cases before the Supreme Court of the United States on behalf of the United States. I had the privilege of arguing a case alongside Judge Starr. We were talking about it earlier, many years ago. He also served as the independent counsel during the Clinton presidency and authored the Starr Report. He testified for almost 12 hours before the Judiciary Committee with regard to that report. Judge Starr is very familiar with this process. He is going to address a series of deficiencies. There's legal issues with regard to Articles 1 and 2, constitutional implications, historical implications, and legal implications of where this case now stands. So I would like to yield my time right now to, if it would please, Chief Justice Kenneth Starr.
All right, let's do this. We'll break away at this point and come back. Catch up a little bit. Of course, Jay Sekulow starting off that. The opening statements for hour three, I guess, of the defense here from the Republicans. We'll get back to that. Also, Jeff Poore joins us. We're going to try to figure out the significance of the Bolton transcript out there and allegations made in that. That's coming up at 12:30. Plus, Representative Matt Simpson joins us at 1. Rolling on. This is Midday Mobile. Glad you're here.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's a happy time of year when the Boot and Pie Minute with its host, Rennie Brabner, is back. If you want to go back and listen to some or you miss a day here and there, listen, they go up in podcast form. If you're subscribing to our podcast, you're getting them delivered to your smartphone through iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn Radio, Spotify, a bunch of platforms. If there's a platform out there for podcasts, we're probably on it. But if you want to get them a la carte, go to fmtalk1065.com, our website. Click the link along the top banner that says Moon Pie Minute. When you do, top items up are the podcast of each day. So after today's podcast will load tomorrow, and we go that way the whole way through Ash Wednesday. So you can go and check out every day from here through Ash Wednesday, the Moon Pie Minute and the story of Mardi Gras from FM Talk 106.5. So check that out. All right, I want to return, and Jeff Poore is going to join us about 10 minutes from right now, but I want to get back to a little bit more of the opening remarks for the president's defense going on in the Senate and Kenneth Starr making the case right now.
It's inherently destabilizing, as well as acrimonious way. Briefly told, the story begins 42 years ago. In the wake of the long national nightmare of Watergate, Congress and President Jimmy Carter collaboratively ushered in a new chapter in America's constitutional history. Together, in full agreement, they enacted the independent counsel provisions of the Ethics in Government Act of 1978. But the new chapter was not simply the age of independent counsels. It became, unbeknownst to the American people, the age of impeachment. During my service in the Reagan administration as counselor in chief of staff to Attorney General William French Smith, the Justice Department took the position that, however well-intentioned, the independent counsel provisions were unconstitutional. Why? In the view of the department, those provisions intruded into the rightful domain and prerogative of the executive branch, of the presidency. The Justice Department's position was eventually rejected by the Supreme Court. But most importantly, in helping us understand this new era in our country's history, Justice Antonin Scalia was in deep dissent. Among his stinging criticisms of that law, Justice Scalia wrote this: "The context of this statute is acrid with the smell of threatened impeachment." Impeachment. Justice Scalia echoed the criticism of the court in which I was serving at the time, the District of Columbia Circuit, which had actually struck down the law as unconstitutional, in a very impressive opinion by renowned Judge Lawrence Silberman. Why? Why would Justice Scalia refer to impeachment? This was a reform measure. There would be no more Saturday night massacres, the firing of special prosecutor, as he was called, Archibald Cox, by President Nixon. Government would now be better, more honest, greater accountability, and the independent counsel would be protected. But the word impeachment haunts that dissenting opinion, and it's not hard to discover why. because the statute by its terms expressly directed the independent counsel to become, in effect, an agent of the House of Representatives. And to what end? To report to the House of Representatives when a very low threshold of information was received that an impeachable offense left undefined may have been committed. To paraphrase President Clinton's very able counsel at the time, Bernie Nussbaum, this statute is a dagger aimed at the heart of the presidency. President Clinton nonetheless signed the reauthorized measure into law, and the nation then went through the long process known as Whitewater, resulting in the findings by the office which I led, the Office of Independent Counsel, in a written report to the House of Representatives. That referral to Congress was stipulated in the Ethics and Government Act of 1978. To put it mildly, Democrats were very upset about what had happened. They then joined Republicans across the aisle, who, for their part, had been outraged by an earlier independent counsel investigation, that of a very distinguished former judge, Lawrence Walsh. During the Reagan administration, Judge Walsh's investigation of what became known to the country as Iran-Contra spawned enormous criticism on the Republican side of the aisle, both as to the investigation itself, but also as to the statute. The acrimony surrounding Iran-Contra, and then the impeachment and the trial, and President Clinton's acquittal by this body led inexorably to the end of the independent counsel era. Enough was enough. And living through that wildly controversial 21-year bold experiment with the independent counsel statute, Congress, in a bipartisan way, had a change of heart. It allowed the law to expire in accordance with its terms in 1999. That would-be and well-intentioned reform measure died a quiet and uneventful death, and it was promptly replaced by Justice Department internal regulations promulgated by Attorney General Janet Reno during the waning months of the Clinton administration. One can review those regulations and see no reference to impeachment. None. No longer were the poison pill provisions of presidential impeachment part of America's legal landscape. They were gone. The Reno regulations seemed to signal a return to traditional norms. Impeachment would no longer be embedded in the actual laws of the land, but returned to the language of the Constitution. But in the meantime, America's constitutional DNA and its political culture had changed. Even with the dawn of the new century, the 21st century, impeachment remained on the lips of countless Americans and echoed frequently in the People's House. The impeachment habit proved to be hard to kick. Ironically, while this was happening here at home, across the Atlantic, the use of impeachment as a weapon disappeared. In the United Kingdom, from which, of course, we inherited the process, impeachment was first used more than two centuries before those first settlers crossed the Atlantic. But upon thoughtful examination, a number of modern-day parliamentary committees looked and found impeachment to be obsolete. Among other criticisms, members of Parliament came to the view that the practice, which had last been attempted in Britain in 1868, fails to meet modern procedural standards of fairness. Fairness. As Sir William McKay recently remarked, impeachment in Britain is dead. Yet here at home, in the world's longest standing constitutional republic, instead of a once in a century phenomenon, which it had been, presidential impeachment has become a weapon.
All right, so there's Ken Starr basically talking about the same thing we've all talked about, right? Where does it go in the future? Does it become the new default political tool for impeachment? Get a forensic look at this through the mind of Jeff Port coming up when we come back after the news break. Plus, we'll talk about this deal of the century, peace deal that was discussed just a couple minutes by President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. We'll talk about that and Alabama Senate race. It's all straight ahead. Glad you're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. So we heard Jay Sekulow, we've listened to Ken Starr now, as they've opened up, I think, hour number three of the president's defense. And let you know, we mentioned it this morning, and this is true on all sides. But yes, there's one version of what's going on inside the Senate, right? You have the House impeachment manager speaking to the senators, but they're looking past the senators at the television cameras. And the same is true for the president's defense team, because there are two juries here. There is the jury that's in the Senate, and of course there's the jury of the American people, which I don't know how many of those folks don't have a galvanized opinion about what's going on. But when they got started Saturday for the president's defense, I think they went like 2 hours or something and closed up shop and came back today because, well, nobody was watching politics on a Saturday, most likely, except for maybe this guy, my buddy. He's on WVNN, of course, weekday afternoons up in Huntsville with the Jeff Poor Show. You read his work in Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News. And the guy most likely to have been watching the Senate impeachment proceedings on a Saturday. Y'all, say hello to Jeff Poor. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. Were you watching? Were you tuned in on a Saturday?
I had it on. I ain't going to lie. I had it muted. There's other things going on during the day. But you did have it on.
See, I told you. I told y'all, and I did not check with Jeff beforehand, but if I had to roll dice here. They got started, they got rolling with that, but they probably said, hey, better to do this on Monday when, you know, people are trying to waste time at work, and we'll watch these impeachment proceedings.
Oh, we had that. We had Auburn playing Iowa State. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having to sport the attention different ways.
Well, it's true. You got that picture in picture. You can do both things. So Republicans, or the president's defense team, back at it in earnest today. And the discussion so far that I've heard has been about just kind of rebutting what was brought by the House impeachment managers. No mention of John Bolton, and I doubt there will be any mention until it is forced. Is that fair to say? And I want to get your take on, a lot of people said, no way Bolton testifies for a long time. I think even your cohort up there in Huntsville said, no way, no way, no way. It looks like there might at least be a foot in the door on this.
I think so. If it doesn't come out in the impeachment trial, they will bring him before one of these many House committees, certainly, I think, to see if they can conjure something up. But the interesting thing, just watching the remarks from a lot of the Republican senators, other than Romney and Collins, we're not really sure about McSally or Lamar Alexander yet, but those two seem to have cover from this to call for witnesses. They still got to get four. They got to get four senators to go along with this, but is are these two other two senators willing to face the fire for allowing witnesses? If we get witnesses, this thing will go on forever. But and that's the question. Do you let the impeachment go on and angering the pro-Trump base, or do you try to appease this, I think, mythical squishy middle that are either going to vote for McSally one way or another, or the Lamar Alexander or whatever? We know Mitt Romney's game, and we know Susan Collins tries to have it both ways as well. So I think that's the big question.
Do you think it is that they're playing to, it's interesting, this is kind of a nuanced view, but that's why we got you on. Are they playing to this undecided voter that, you know, back home in Tennessee, for example, with Alexander, or are they not sure that it won't come out down the road, that the book will be published and then there'll be, and I want to point out, like I did this morning, this is once again, he said, it's what Bolton's saying went on versus what the president's saying went on. But maybe the book comes out down the road and there's corroborating witnesses and Lamar Alexander doesn't want to be going, well, I was wrong on that one.
I suppose, I just don't know that there's the appetite. It's razor thin close to go either way, but you know, the media, if you get caught in the media bubble, you think, well, they're going to have to do it. They're going to have witnesses now. But there will be a backlash for anybody that... And there's no reason to think Martha McSally is either after her run-in with Manu Raju of CNN last week.
Right.
But do you really want to deal with the phone calls? I mean, this could be Kavanaugh 2.0 from some of these members. Do they really want to deal with that? I think the Democrats are pretty much all lockstep on this. It's just getting four votes to go one way or another.
But, I mean, we can hearken back to, it was President Trump himself early on said he wanted witnesses, right? He loved the idea of getting the Bidens on the witness stand.
I think so, but is that what Mitch McConnell wants? Is that, and then does, now that the cat's out of the bag, that's another question. Now that we kind of know where John Bolton's going to take it, and the Democrats demanding witnesses, Do you bring in Hunter Biden and Joe Biden? If you notice, there's something really interesting that's happened in the last 48 hours with some of these Republican senators, and Rudy Giuliani have really gone very, very hard against Joe Biden. And, you know, when you see Lindsey Graham and you see Rudy Giuliani start talking about Joe Biden in terms of criminal activity, and, you know, they kind of take it to that up a notch, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder that maybe they knew this Bolton thing was coming, and why not put Joe Biden on the stand or whatever with witnesses and see, you know, now that we know what Bolton's going to say, given the book is leaked, if this is really truly a sort of show impeachment trial for TV cameras, then give them what they want. There's a lot of people in the Senate that absolutely do not want this. They don't want weeks or months more of not being able to be on a campaign trail. If you're some Democrats, that's a struggle. But also, a lot of Republicans, guess what they want to do in the Senate? They don't want to sit and be sequestered like a jury inside a Senate impeachment trial.
Yeah, where they can't use their smartphones or tablets or drink coffee, you know, for 12 hours of the shot. So, yeah, we get it. If this goes on, and you're right, I mean, if it goes on, then you now have witnesses in the mix. We've seen how long the process is. Mitch McConnell had talked about, you know, 12-hour days, 6 days a week, 3 to 4 weeks. But if all of a sudden you have witnesses, I mean, I don't know how to extrapolate that, but you spent some time in Washington. I mean, we talk about additional months or additional weeks. I mean, just what's your best guess?
That's anybody's guess, but there's been a few senators that may have talked to about this. I think Lindsey Graham, I think, is a good, because he was a House manager, and now he is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, thinks without witnesses, this thing's over by this Friday. With witnesses, this thing could go on well into March.
Wow. He's just joining us, talking to Jeff Poore about what's going on today and also the Bolton information. And, I'm always interested also just not in the idealism of the politics, but sometimes the mechanics of it. And I think there's a lesson here that it's probably been done many times before, but it's standing out to me. If you have a manuscript that the White House has, and they have to go through it to make sure it doesn't have classified information, but they have no, I think they can take all the time they want. In other words, they can put this manuscript on ice. Then if you're Bolton or somebody supporting Bolton, you just, you send it out to some friends to look at, and then if they happen to leak it, look at that. It's out in the public arena.
Right. You just leak it to Maggie Haberman of the New York Times. Right. I mean, that's
because you didn't release it here. You didn't publish it. You didn't release it. It's just a manuscript, Jeff.
But it just happened. It just seems like obviously they knew, people in Washington knew that this was coming. And it's the classic Sunday night thing that you tee up for Monday. I think probably what they didn't anticipate was the Kobe Bryant stuff hogging the news cycle. But if without Kobe Bryant, I think they thought they had a grand slam here, because it just had all the markings of the way Washington does these things.
It's always where people go, well, they'll make a law to keep something from happening. I'm going, listen, as soon as there's a law made, all y'all that want all these new law made, there's some workaround, right? I mean, there's always a workaround out there.
Right. And you can hide behind the First Amendment in this case, or freedom of the press. I mean, this was going to get out. My guess is Bolton to do it. He could have sat on this manuscript until impeachment was over and then given it to the legal counsel and had a good book. But it just feels like some inside baseball or some kind of sign-stealing thing. You're like, oh, yeah, this was just happenstance. This is just good shoe leather reporting. Come on, guys.
As we look through this, so it is interesting to see how people's opinions change of people that have been in Washington or outside the administration, then inside the administration and back outside the Trump administration. I guess I feel good and satisfied that I've always been somebody who questioned John Bolton, right, even when it was not cool. And I did that and continue to do it. But it is interesting to hear how Bolton was. I questioned when President Trump brought Bolton in. It seemed absolutely 180 from the foreign policy that President Trump had campaigned on. I remember going, why?
Yeah, but you keep this in mind that he's very good on Fox News, very good on TV, and he's really solid.
But he's a neocon.
Understands situations. It wasn't his Middle East point of view that got him in the White House. It was his understanding of North Korea that got him in the White House, I think.
But President Trump's kind of ideas about North Korea were contrary to Bolton's as well.
Well, yes, but it also, in some ways it sends a signal that, hey, this is a guy that's wanted to scuffle, So, I
got you. I see what you're saying.
I think it was more of the idea that John Bolton had this knowledge base, and what he did with the knowledge was always questionable, but he understood it. He just had the wrong solutions for a lot of people.
All right. Hey, can you hang on a second during the news break?
Sure.
Okay, we're coming right back. More with Jeff Poore as we talk about this Bolton issue. And also, I want to get into some of the Alabama Senate politics. Remember that? Remember that Alabama Senate race? Remember that thing going on? Yeah, we'll get into that when we return. Stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Hey, Dalton, let's, other than line one, we'll clear the lines here and open up some space at 343-0106 because another pair of tickets, actually, it's one ticket, it's a couple's ticket for Saturday night, the Joy of Life Ball that goes on at the Daphne Civic Center. I'm one of the MCs of this event. We got a table full of FM Talk 106.5. People are going to be there. And it is all the fun. It's all the great music, the food, the drinks. Also an auction going on during this Mardi Gras Ball. But 100% of the proceeds benefit St. Jude. And it's a charity that, obviously, if you've listened over the years, pretty important to us around here. And I'm very, very happy to have Webb and the crew get us involved in this. And I can't wait to see y'all Saturday night. And caller number 6 right now at 343-0106. Got one of those tickets, $150 value for two of you to come to the ball. Now, it is costume de rigueur, so giving you some time to go suck it in, guys, and go get your tails rented. Ladies, y'all have, you know, y'all got all that. Y'all know what you wear and all that. So I'm not even getting into that world. I know better. But dudes, you got to have tails and come to the event, and I'd love to see you there on Saturday night. Starts at 7 in the evening at Daphne Civic Center. Goes till 1 in the morning. Hopefully, I think they have all my stuff stacked early in the evening, because by 1 in the morning, it might be sleepy time. But you can party into the next day, and it all benefits St. Jude. Great stuff. Actually, I was over at the Daphne Civic Center not long ago, setting up some equipment here, helping my buddy Jeff Bohr when he conducted the AL1 Republican primary debate for Baldwin County Republican Party. And Jeff, we go from that to having singing and dancing and frivolity on Saturday night. How about that?
It's weighty good issues like medical marijuana to letting the good times roll,
yep,
right?
Yep, and dancing to 80s music. I'm in. I'm good at both venues. So, but
are you really that good at 80s dancing there, Sean?
Wait till you see. It looks, you know what? I look good to myself. You know, I don't know what I actually look like, but to me, my moves are fantastic. All right, I want to talk about a couple things here back home in Alabama. Obviously, they deal with people who would like to be sitting in that seat now occupied by Doug Jones in the Senate. They'd like to be sitting there 12 hours a day listening to the testimony of the president's defense. And on the Republican side, you've got a story here that I just saw on your Twitter feed that is showing is this an internal poll coming from the Sessions camp? What is this?
Right, it's the Sessions internal poll, which showed them as a big lead. Another interesting part of it was that Bradley Byrd has passed Tommy Tuberville for second place, albeit very slightly. To be honest, I'm seeing a lot of that in other places, with Bradley Byrd showing some signs of life right now.
Right. Well, that, now we got a horse race.
Here's the question, though. If you have this poll and you got a big number like that, you're Jeff Sessions, and you're approaching 50% plus one to avoid a runoff, why do you put this out there and put a target on yourself?
Do you do it? Okay, let me flip this around. Do you do it, because this is something, you know, you and I have talked about over the years and you've taught me lessons on, do you do it to dissuade donations to your opponents? Is it a money thing?
No, because Jeff Sessions is going to have all the money. I don't think so at all.
Okay.
I think he's got that advantage. A lot of the money has dried up since he got in. I mean, the power of Richard Shelby, that pretty much keeps money from coming in, I think.
Okay. So it's not about money. So is it... would you just be, but if you had internal polling that showed you out there and you're running his campaign, would you just be quiet? What would you do?
You know, I mean, like, what, there has to be some kind of strategy here. What had happened, the Trump tweet last week, you saw that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Trump tweet.
What poll was that?
Old poll from, it was an old Alpha poll from early December.
Okay.
Showing Tuberville only 4 points behind General Sessions. So maybe you've got to show something because of that.
Gotcha.
Perhaps.
Responding.
That's the only thing I could think. But I don't know that I'd want to put that big number out there, because Tuberville's got to make his move. Tuberville has some money in the bank. He's got to make his move. Bradley Byrd's making his move. If it looks like we're trying to play to the second round, but then all of a sudden there might not be a second round, well, then you're going to have a situation like you have in a second congressional district where all the candidates will team up and go after the front runner. You want, ideally, if you're Jeff Sessions, you want Bradley Byrd and Tommy Tuberville battling it out
against each other. Sure. Yeah, you want them beating up each other while you keep your powder dry.
Right. You don't want them coming after you. And I feel like this big number they put out today might tempt them into doing that.
Because everybody is playing. I mean, everybody's playing for a runoff. And you talk about this strategy. Other than Jeff Sessions, Tupperville camp and Byrne camp are playing for a runoff, and probably have already strategized how they would run their runoff campaign, I imagine.
Yeah, and I think the personnel that Tupperville's brought in reflects that.
Yeah, that was your take.
They had a big campaign shakeup a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
They brought in a guy, you may remember him from 17, named Jeff Rowe, that worked for Luther Strange. But he was brought in to run negative advertising against Roy Moore, against Mo Brooks. You could go back. Some of those really just kind of, how classic or Roy Moore is a gum-grabbing, NRA hating, stuff like that. This is totally unbelievable. But that was his specialty, making that kind of stuff believable. And that's who Tupperville has brought in. So the signal there is they're going to come hard at some point after Jeff Sessions.
Now, okay. They're going to come after Jeff Sessions. They brought the guns in here. Oh, which, by the way, can I take a side note a minute here? You had tweeted the Tupperville ad today, which, by the way, as much as I spend all my time laughing about how everybody in every race in Alabama, instead of just talking about their, Republican chops and their conservative chops, tries to say, no, indeed, I am even more dedicated to President Trump than my opponent. What is the line here on the Tupperville ad? Said a vote for me is a vote for Donald Trump?
Yeah, so we've heard these ads for years in Alabama. Ever since Donald Trump was elected, we've been hearing these ads because of his overwhelming popularity. But essentially, you nailed it. It's a vote for me is a vote for Donald Trump at his wall or something, right?
Like, I keep asking, y'all, vote for whom you want to. But there's not anybody that I know that's running on the Republican side of this in the primary for Senate that wouldn't vote with the president and defend the president. I hate this idea that there's all these people within the Republicans that aren't going to support President Trump.
What I would say is this. Do you remember back earlier last year, Tommy Tuberville made some ill-advised comments about Donald Trump and veterans?
Yep.
Up in the shoals. Okay, so there's some talk that that is what had kept Donald Trump from outright endorsing Tommy Tuberville. That somebody got that in front of him and said, look, you cannot endorse this football coach. Because he was very high up on the football coach. In addition to that, what do we know about Bradley Byrne? He may not have all the boxes checked for, what you want in a candidate. But one thing you can look at Bradley Byrne is colleagues in the House, for the most part, like him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Scalise, who is the minority whip in the House, spends a lot of time with Donald Trump, talks Bradley Byrne up a lot. You have all these different forces. And then also keep this in mind, there's a lot of old Jeff Sessions people still working in that White House right now. So you have all these different forces working together, trying to woo the president one way or another. But he was really strongly leaning Tupperville until somebody got the veterans' comments in front of him.
Interesting. We're going to be talking about this again on Wednesday when you join us on Mobile Mornings.
Yes, we will do it. There'll probably be some more news there, I suspect. Things are really kind of speeding up now.
That's for sure. Jeff, thanks, man.
Thanks for having me on, Sean.
All right, coming right back, Matt Simpson joins us on Midday Mobile.